Joy is the first glimpse of blue sky peeking through the overcast of a late winter day. Joy is the first brave tulip of the season, the first harvest of fresh blueberries, all the little pops of color to remind you that spring is on its way. New Yorkers know this better than anyone. It's time to bring the spring back into your wardrobe, and nothing says New York spring like Kate Spade New York. Their new spring collection is perfect for all your adventures, day or night. Discover and shop the spring collection at Kate Spade New York.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
From The Cut and Gimlet Media, this is The Cut on Tuesdays. I'm your host, Molly Fisher. Today we're talking about something that, for a while, it was impossible not to hear about.
A migrant caravan heading from Central America to the U.S. border right now.
Caravan. A
caravan.
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 The growing caravan.
We will not let you in. We are not going to let you in.
Earlier this fall, if you heard about the caravan, what you heard was they're coming.
They are marching through Mexico, growing in size.
That group is still about 900 miles away.
At least 700 miles away.
That's about 500 miles away.
First group of migrants from the caravan has reached Tijuana.
The caravan reached its destination a few weeks ago. The migrants had finished a massive cross-country journey, and now they faced a new challenge, actually entering the United States. Not long after they arrived, the U.S. Border Patrol tear-gassed a group of migrants near the crossing that links Tijuana and San Diego. There's a photo from that day that shows a woman wearing a T-shirt with Elsa from Frozen and running away from a cloud of gas. She's pulling two little kids in diapers alongside her. All along, it was pretty apparent that a lot of the caravan news coverage was filled with wild paranoia about tubercular ISIS fighters in MS-13 getting money from George Soros. But seeing a photo of toddlers running from tear gas made it painfully obvious how far the reality was from that kind of coverage. We wanted to learn more about what was going on the ground, about what had brought people to a point where they were willing to face all the dangers they'd faced in the months since leaving home. So, last week, our producer Sarah McVee traveled to Tijuana to talk to some of the women who are now waiting at a camp near the border. She's back now. Hey, Sarah.
Hello.
Welcome back. First of all, tell me about the camp.
So it's this big concrete lot that used to be used for music concerts. And music concerts.
Like my favorite kind. So it's like a stadium?
Well, it looks sort of like where you might have a flea market. But It's like this big concrete
open
expanse.
Air, yeah.
And then with like stands around the sides. And inside there's about 3,000 people from the caravan. And they're living in these tents or under tarpaulins, which have either been donated by aid organizations or given to people as they traveled through Mexico.
Just by like...
by... lovely
people
strangers.
They were passing by, yeah.
Yeah. And all they have with them is what they were able to carry. So people might have a blanket and a bag of clothes. Aid groups have set up food stations where people line up for plates of rice and beans. The people here have to shower outside in public. There are hoses coming out of the walls. And there are about 15 porta potties for those 3,000 people. And on day one, the porta potties were already overflowing. The conditions are horrible, but you also see how people are trying to preserve a little bit of normal life. You know, people have strung up clotheslines, there are Honduran flags and American flags, kids are playing soccer, teenagers are listening to music on boomboxes. I ran into one family celebrating a little girl's second birthday in the camp.
How did this group of people find each other? Where did this all start?
The caravan actually started as a Facebook group with about 160 people in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. It's really dangerous to travel through Central America and Mexico. You often have to pay off people smugglers in order to pass through safely. And so the caravan was an opportunity for people to travel en masse in a group safely. And then as the caravan progressed, it just grew and grew in size, kind of like a Facebook group would, until there were thousands and thousands of people. And by the time it hit Tijuana, there was about 6,000 people in the group. People would hear about it on Facebook or WhatsApp. I met one woman named Mirna who told me she heard about the caravan when it went right down the street in front of her house. And she was so excited that she ran inside and, you know, got blankets and clothes and food and started giving away a lot of her things.
She was like one of the lovely people along the way who gave them tents and things that they're now using in the camp.
Exactly. Her friend, who I also talked to, said she was just like Santa Claus. And then in a sort of split-second decision, this woman, Mirna, decided to join the caravan too, and she just grabbed a couple of things from her house and set off on foot with them.
How long have these people been on the road? Like, how long has their journey to this camp been?
So they left San Pedro Sula in Honduras in mid-October, and they travelled for 6 weeks to reach Tijuana. That's nearly a 3,000-mile journey, so it's like walking from New York to LA. A lot of the women had to carry their own children. Occasionally along the way, freight trucks would stop and give them rides, but that can be really dangerous too. A woman named Lucia, who travelled with her 2-year-old, told me what it was like. The trucks would slow down, but while they were moving, they would have to try and climb up on top of them. So she'd send her cousin and her aunt up first and then pass her 2-year-old daughter up onto the truck and then climb up herself. She told me that once her daughter almost fell off and she just thought, like, what am I doing risking my daughter's life?
Horrible, la verdad.
Hearing Lucia makes you think, what are people leaving behind that this seems better? That you might have to risk your child's life in order to get away? You don't walk 3,000 miles on foot with a 2-year-old for fun. Everyone I spoke to had different reasons for leaving, different plans for what to do now that they've arrived at the border. But the one story that I kept hearing was the story of families broken apart. Mothers without their children. Mothers who have to make the decision of which child needs them most, of who is light enough to carry, and when they aren't, of how they can best make a life so that one day they can have their children back. The decision of who to take with you is sometimes as simple as who is with you when you flee. I'm going to share the stories of two women whose decision to join the caravan goes directly back to their families. These are stories that I can't stop thinking about, that kind of have me by the throat. And I'm going to start with a woman I met named Claudia. Claudia's 29. She's in Tijuana with her 6-year-old daughter, Angelina, but she has 6 other children back in Honduras. When their father died a couple of years ago, she got involved with a man who had a grown-up son. Not long after, that man's son was murdered, and Claudia knew who did it. He wanted her to tell him, but she couldn't.
I can't tell him who hurt him or killed him, even if I know, because my life and my children are at stake. How am I going to do that? I'm all they have. He wanted to get the information out of me by force because he heard that I knew who it was. He grabbed me by the hair and pushed me against the wall 3 times. He gave me a hell of a punch in the face with his fist closed, and then he came and grabbed a big knife.
Her oldest son managed to stop Claudia's partner and temporarily defuse the situation, but Claudia was worried he'd turn violent again and kill her. Or he'd somehow force her to say what she knew, and then gangs would kill her children. It was an impossible situation, and so she decided to leave. When he wasn't paying attention, she said she grabbed the only money she had on her, which was roughly equivalent to $30, and her six-year-old daughter Angelina, and Claudia just took off, as if she was going shopping.
Tell me about the moment you decided to leave.
I didn't know anything about a caravan or anything like that. I just wanted to get as far away as I could. So this taxi driver gave me a marker and I wrote on my shirt, "Going north, please give me a ride."
Someone picked her and Angelina up, and once they were on the road, she called her mum, where her other six children were staying.
What did you say to your other children?
I didn't say anything. I just told them, "I'll be right back."
Pero no era cierto.
But it wasn't true.
Luego cuando llamé pues a mi casa de regreso, me dicen, "Mama, ¿y qué te pasó? Que nunca regresaste."
And then when I called, they asked me, "Mom, what happened to you that you never came back?"
Claudia and Angelina continued to make their way north, sometimes hitching rides, sometimes taking buses, and sometimes walking. In Guatemala, they heard about the caravan, which by that point was thousands strong, and they joined. Now Claudia and Angelina are living in a tent in Tijuana. They're waiting to seek asylum in the US.
What's going to happen to them now?
So it's complicated. The process for claiming asylum is not at all what you would imagine it to be. It used to be that you just go to a port of entry, declare your intention to seek asylum, and you would be processed.
So like a port of entry as in you show up at the border?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And now because of the huge bottleneck in cases, that's just not how it works anymore. The Obama administration started this policy called metering, which means that at certain border crossings, a limited number of people will be processed each day. So one of the days that I was there, I went down to the border to see what was happening, and there was this man there with like a scrappy kind of clipboard with a list of numbers on it, and he was taking down people's names and giving them a number. He was actually a volunteer migrant taking down the names, not a US official. And so how it works is he would just basically write down their name and give them a little scrap of paper with a number on it. And that's passed on. And then each day, a handful of names or 40 names or 100 names or whatever number of claims the US government is dealing with that day will get read out.
Yeah.
And then those people will get on a bus and be ferried away to have their asylum claims heard by a US official. And so that's where Claudia is right now. She's waiting for her number to be called. When did you get your number?
I got it yesterday morning, and I got 1702.
Did they tell you how long you should expect to wait to be processed?
Probably a month or longer.
Do people seem like they trust the process by and large?
Yeah, I think when you've traveled 3,000 miles and you're told that there is a process and that you will be seen, that's like the last remaining shred of hope. You know, some of these women were there a few weeks ago when US troops tear gassed groups of them while they were protesting at the border. So they have a lot of reason to lose hope.
Mm-hmm.
But I think given how far they've traveled, a lot of them really want to hold on to some belief that they might get into the US. And this list represents the only option they have.
What does it take to actually qualify for asylum?
So here's what the US Citizenship and Immigration Services says. To apply for asylum, you have to prove that you have either been persecuted or you're going to be persecuted on the basis of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group.
So most of those seem pretty self-explanatory, but social group seems more ambiguous. Can you talk about what that means?
It's been handled differently over the years. So under the Obama administration, it could include people who were fleeing domestic violence. But when Jeff Sessions became Attorney General, he changed the rules to make it much harder for people like Claudia, who is escaping violence, to apply for asylum and be successful. So Claudia's hoping for asylum, but her chances are much slimmer than they would have been if she'd made the trip even just a couple of years ago.
For Claudia, America is a place she imagines but has never seen. After the break, we'll hear from a woman who isn't leaving home. She's trying to get back.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Jury selection continues this week in a Manhattan courtroom where former President Donald Trump is on trial for falsifying business records. Prospective jurors were asked 42 questions aimed at determining whether they can be fair and impartial, such as, can you be fair and impartial? Have you ever been a Boogaloo boy or in Antifa? And what podcasts do you listen to? Trump's required to be present in the courtroom for this trial that could last until June, and he's been talking to reporters before he goes into the courtroom.
I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states, North Carolina, Georgia, campaigning. This is all coming from the White House because the guy can't put two sentences together. He can't campaign. They're using this in order to try and win an election.
Donald J. Trump in court this week on Today Explained, every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Welcome back. On today's episode, we're hearing stories from two women who crossed Mexico with the caravan. Our producer, Sarah McVee, traveled to the camp where they're staying in Tijuana.
So I actually met Carla, the next woman that I'm going to tell you about, while I was down the road from the camp buying some tacos.
Go on.
I was struggling because I can't speak Spanish, and so I was like...
Tardes.
Pointing hopelessly at the grill.
Major disadvantage.
And this woman came up to me and said, do you need help? And I was like, yes. And so she helped
me get the tacos.
I need them. So she helped me order the tacos and I sat down to eat and she was sitting next to me and she said to me in English, what are you doing here? And I told her I was a reporter and asked her about her story.
My name is Carla. I am 38 years old. I'm from Honduras.
Tell me why you joined the caravan.
Why? Because I want to see my kids. They live in the United States, in South Carolina. You know, I am very sad because they over there, I am here, you know. And I want to see them.
For most of the women in the caravan, getting to the U.S. is a dream. They think that if they can make it across the border, their lives will be better. But for Carla, it's not an imaginary place. It's her home. 15 years ago, Carla left Honduras and walked on her own across the border.
In 2003, I come in the La Bestia, you know, the train.
La Bestia, the beast, is a nickname for a network of freight trains that run through Mexico. There aren't any passenger rail cars. Migrants ride on top of the cargo. It's extremely dangerous. Back then, Carla's journey wasn't the political football it is today. She walked across the border undetected.
Then I walk to Arizona. Yeah, I walk 3 days, 3 nights, November 2003.
Who did you go with?
By myself.
Carla had 2 small children and she wasn't able to support them in Honduras.
My daughter, she was 8 years old, and my boy, he was 14 months. I leave them with my mom. They need milk, diapers, clothes, shoes, everything, you know. And it's very difficult. Yeah, and that's why I come in to United States. I work on restaurant, golf club, yeah.
When Carla got to America, she found work. She sent money back home so her kids in Honduras had food and diapers. She settled in South Carolina, fell in love, and had 3 more kids. She went to church, she made friends, she made a new life in America. But she missed her kids in Honduras. She missed her mum. She talked to them regularly on the phone, but she wanted to see them. She couldn't easily travel back and forth. She was an undocumented migrant. Carla was caught between 2 countries, pulled between 2 sets of kids, and trying to do what was best for them both. So in 2012, she went back to Honduras to visit her older kids. But when she tried to re-enter the US, she was taken aside and questioned.
They gave me permission for a stay, only for a stay and for work. They tell me all the time, this is not residence, this is not for you stay forever. They tell me that.
Last year, after 15 years living, working, and raising her children in America, Carla was deported. She was told she had 30 days to go on her own, or she'd be put in jail for 30 days and then be sent back anyway. Carla was working as a housekeeper at the time, and her boss tried to help her.
She tried to help me, but they can't, you know. She's so sad when I tell her I go back to Honduras. And she tell me, Carla, I need to help you, but I talk to somebody and no answer, you know. She tried to talk to the government and nobody answered.
Carla bought her own airfare and returned to Honduras. Her children stayed in the U.S. with their dad.
Jahir, he's in the United States. He's 14 years old. Donovan, he's born in the United States. He's very smart in school. And my last baby, she's name is Kiara. And she's so sweet. You know, it's my daughter, you know.
She's 7.
She's 7 years old, yeah.
She must miss you.
She miss me. She tell me, when I talk to her, she told me, Mommy, I want you to come back. Please, I need you. I missed you, you know. All the time she tell me, she miss me.
What does it feel like to hear her say that?
I feel like, I don't know, I can't tell you. I don't know how I can tell you. But I'm so sad, you know. When I left my kids over there. I don't want to talk about that. Please. You know, I miss my kids. And I don't want to... They stay over there and I don't see them when they go into school, when they come back from school, you know, and I don't do nothing for them because I don't stay with them, you know. It's very difficult for me.
Did you think about taking your kids with you?
No, no. It's very dangerous in Honduras. No. It's a lot of drugs and everything, you know, guns. Mm. That's why I don't take my kid with me.
So many of the women I talked to were fleeing gang violence. A few years back, San Pedro Sula, the city where the caravan was first formed, had the highest homicide rate in the world. An average of 3 people a day were murdered. One woman told me it wasn't safe for her to be alone in the street. She'd been robbed over and over. Another woman I met was with her 18-year-old son, who gangs had tried to recruit. He didn't want to join them. His cousin had already been murdered by gangs. And when they went to the police, they said they couldn't help and that it was best they leave. So people do.
My friend, she told me, Carla, it's one caravan go to Mexico. Can we go? And I said, yes. Yes, I do. I need to go back to the United States because I have my 3 kids over there.
Tell me about traveling with the caravan.
You know, we walk, and sometimes we don't eat. And right now, oh my God, I don't sleep last night. I don't sleep. That was very, very cold. And you know, I don't have a mattress. I don't have blankets, you know. I have only one. Now I have one more. But last night, oh my God.
Carla is now in limbo. She can't go back to Honduras. It's not safe for her there. And she can't get back to America. She's stuck. She's desperate to see her children, but has no idea how to make that happen.
Mami, te voy a poner a la muchacha para que hables con ella, okay?
Over the couple of days I spent with Carla, she was glued to her phone. She talked for hours with her kids on video chat, only saying goodbye when her battery or her internet was drained. She said talking to Kiara was the hardest.
She made me sad. She made me cry, you know, because she needed me. She said she needed me a lot. Mommy, you go to Australia? I say, no, mommy. I want to go see you. Oh, okay. It's too far away, mommy. I say, yes. It's too far away, mommy.
What does your daughter do when you cry?
No, she told me, Mommy, why you cry? I don't cry, baby. I say, I don't cry. She can hear me. But I say, no.
I listened to Carla and Kiara talk on the phone for ages. It's clear how much they miss each other and how much it's killing Carla to be away from her. Carla wanted me to meet each of her kids, and I video chatted with all of them from the camp.
Y le pregunta de Australia, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hello.
Kiara had a million questions for me and is just the sweetest little girl.
What are you doing?
When I got back to the US, I wanted to understand what it's been like for Kiara. She's 7. And when you're 7, your mum is your whole world. I asked Carla if it was okay for me to give Kiara a call. And she said yes.
Oh, hi, Sarah. Oh, what you doing today?
Kiara can't remember the moment her mum left a year ago. She just remembers what it was like before and what it's like now.
Can you remember what it was like when your mum lived in South Carolina with you?
It was actually fun. I got to take a shower with her.
That's nice.
Now I can take a shower alone since she's not here.
What are your favorite things about her?
She's nice. She loves me. And I left her back. And she actually plays with me sometimes.
Why did she have to go?
This weird president called something, well, I don't know his name, sent her over there.
What would you like him to know about your mum?
I would like to tell him that she's nice. She's the one who knows a lot of math, but she's a grown up. And that she's a very special woman to me. Very special mom to me. It's a bad life missing her. You should see how my heart feels. Feels bad. Feels sad.
And what did she tell you about when she's coming back?
She didn't tell me when she's coming back. She just feels, she hopes she's going to come back. So when did you guys meet?
So we met in the place where she's staying in Mexico.
I don't think she has money, does she? I worry that she's going to get hurt, so. She's scared of some things, like losing me.
She's scared of that?
Yeah. And she already lost me.
She's trying to get back to you. What would you want her to know?
That I'm safe here at the house and I'm playing with my brother. I'm trying to have fun here while I'm waiting until my mom comes back.
That's really brave of you.
Yeah, I know. I'm always going to love my mom even though she's not here. I hope she comes back here.
Carla may not have a claim. Almost 80% of claims from Honduras are denied. But she's made it this far, and it's hard to see her giving up.
That's it for this week's show. We'll see you next Tuesday. The Cut on Tuesdays is produced by Sarah McVee and Olivia Natt. We had more help from Jasmine Romero. Our senior producer is Kimmy Regler. We're edited by Stella Bugby, Nazanin Rafsanjani, and Alex Bloomberg, who is pleasantly surprised by how funny his coworkers are on Slack. Music, sound design, and mixing are by Haley Shaw. Our theme song is Play It Right by Amelia Meath, Nick Sanborn, Molly Sarlay, and Alexandra Sauser-Monig. Field producing and translation are by Andalusia Null Soloff. Additional translation is by Sylvina Balderman. Voiceover is by Monica Delgado. Special thanks to Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jenny Wall, Daniela Araya, Sofia Enriquez, Teodorina Bayo, Thais Tavara, and Hamish McDonald. The Cut on Tuesdays is a production of Gimlet Media and The Cut.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.